Now, both Democrats and moderate Republicans have raised red flags in the GOP Senate health care bill. One of the biggest areas of concern that critics have raised is how it deals with opioid addiction. The new bill gives $45 billion to fund the fight against the opioid epidemic. But some are questioning how effective that will be with larger rollbacks to Medicaid, especially since many of the people seeking treatment for addiction rely on that health program. The controversy over the federal government's role in fighting the crisis comes as states are taking big steps to fight the opioid epidemic. Today, Governor Walker signed 7 bills to fight opioid addiction. Joining us now to look at what the GOP health care bill could mean for the opioid crisis is Dr. Mike Miller. He is the medical director of the Harrington Recovery Center at Rogers Memorial Hospital in Oconomowoc. Dr. Miller, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, as you're watching, and this is changing from time to time, but big picture, how do you think the GOP health care bill would affect people currently seeking treatment for opioid addiction?
It would be devastating. The situation before the two big pieces of legislation in my field, which were the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act of 2008, signed by George W. Bush, and then the ACA, which is more well-known, were that addiction and mental health both were finally treated on an equal basis with medical surgical conditions. And people could seek care using their private insurance, and there wouldn't be insurance barriers. There are all sorts of provisions to these bills, including a prohibition on the number of visits you could get per year, or the number of days in the hospital you could get, or lifetime caps on benefits. And those were eliminated. The ACA affirmed that and expanded it, and more people were eligible because there were some exclusions in the 2008 bill that were reduced in the ACA. And so I spent most of my career in a situation where there were a lot of cases, but not many patients. People had the disease, but they couldn't get care because of financial barriers. And about 80% of the addiction treatment in the United States was offered through public sector mechanisms like Medicaid and just federal block grants. And the private sector, like commercial health insurance plans, just wasn't in the game. What happened with the ACA on top of the parity bill is that in the private world where people have employer-based health insurance, my goodness, they had access to treatment. And the thing that was really important in the ACA, which is absolutely targeted through the Senate version of the bill, is the essential benefits package, which said that emergency services, preventive services, inpatient care, a variety of types of care, certainly reproductive health care, but included were mental health care, addiction care, essential benefit. So you couldn't sell a policy in the individual market without these benefits. And group plans were required to have these benefits. Actually, they weren't required to have them. If you had benefits, they had to be at parity. But the individual market, you had to have the benefits, essential benefits package. So these various versions, the House version, the various and sundry Senate versions, as they're trying to cobble together a majority, all are doing some of the basic things, really taking a huge hit at Medicaid. But on the private side, getting rid of the essential benefits package. And so people will not have access. Certainly the opioid epidemic has a lot of attention these days, and rightly so. Again, it still pales in comparison to alcohol. And people need treatment for a variety of addiction and mental health conditions. And so, really, Rob, we could talk about the policy and the politics. But the politics is trying to get 50 votes. And so your listeners are probably pretty knowledgeable about this stuff, how just like happened with the ACA, where you find one senator you need to give them a plum, they're going through like 7 senators to give them all the plum for Louisiana, Alaska, various states where there's a key senator. But I do find it a bit cynical that this idea of if we could just throw $45 billion at the opioid epidemic, maybe we'd get people to sign on for the bill. I can tell you, practicing addiction medicine, $45 billion would be great, but it's a bribe. And it's not going to come close to counteracting the devastation in reducing access to Medicaid and all the Medicaid expansion states, and getting rid of the essential benefits package.
Right. So we're not even necessarily just talking about the funding levels, the amount that's cut from Medicaid, the amount that's thrown into targeted opioid funding. This essential benefits issue, what would happen to someone currently in one of these plans who has to sign up for a plan that might not have that addiction coverage?
Well, you know, for obviously not forever, but since employer-based health insurance, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and all the commercials, the Aetnas and the Prudentials and the Hartfords and everybody's came into vogue, mental health and addiction were discriminated against. The benefits were very different. They were either non-existent or very limited. Okay, so you could have great insurance. I work for a Fortune 500 company, and I'm insured. But for this area, you were grossly underinsured. And if you could get payment for treatment, pretty soon it would end because it would be capped. That's the way the world was before 2008. It changed with parity. The ACA then, again, expanded all of this. But what would happen is you will be able to purchase insurance that I would call lousy insurance. People use different terms, and people use euphemisms that want to say it and say, well, something more affordable. Well, it's more affordable because it doesn't cover as much. And so if you've got a med-surg problem, well, that's fine. But if you have a mental health or addiction problem that was covered at parity, at par, under the essential benefits of the ACA, no more with this Senate bill. And so you may have the ability to get your surgery covered, even your obstetrical care covered. Forget about it when it comes to these things that would be taken out. If it's not an essential benefit, the insurers don't have to carry it. They'll cover it. So you can build a plan which has less benefits. And that's the thought, is that people will think it'll never happen to me, and so they won't buy it. They won't select it. You know, contrary to the statement that our president made a while back, of course, we all know healthcare is complicated. It's very complicated. And this whole issue of parity and essential benefits, it sounds so wonky and people's eyes glaze over, but real lives are affected by this stuff.
We're talking to Dr. Mike Miller with the Harrington Recovery Center at Rogers Memorial Hospital in Oconomowoc, also past president of the American Society of Addiction Medicine, looking at the Senate health care plan, how it would cover addiction treatment, opioid, but not just opioid addiction treatment. Let's talk a little bit, Dr. Miller, about effective addiction treatment. I think people think of maybe a methadone clinic for opioids, or people think of somebody ending up in the emergency room or getting that Narcan dose after an overdose. I'm seeing more and more people saying, yeah, and it matters having that primary medical contact to work in the depression treatment, maybe to cover all the other things that go into that addiction.
Well, I'm preparing a talk to give next month that says, you know, when you know addiction, you know medicine. Because every aspect of the person's life is affected by addiction. You mentioned all sorts of things, including emergency room visits, but also infectious disease. The epidemic of HIV is less than at its peak, but the epidemic of hepatitis C far outpaces the scope of HIV. So from injection drug use, the diseases that are transmitted, Certainly, treatment-resistant tuberculosis in folks that are really in tough inner-city environments. There's so many things that addiction affects. Perinatal withdrawal syndrome, neonatal withdrawal syndrome when mom has been exposed and the baby is, let's not say the baby's born addicted because they're not. They're born physically dependent and may have to go through withdrawal management in the NICU. But you got so many different aspects of this. And so, you know, what is addiction treatment? Well, first of all, it should be compassionate. It should be evidence-based. And it should be medical care. And having physicians involved, this is what I've spent my career as an addiction medicine physician and leading the American Society of Addiction Medicine to get doctors more involved in this. So it's not something where you go to your doctor and you ask about addiction care and they say, I don't know, I wasn't taught this in medical school. Well, in fact, they weren't. But that's starting to change. So it should be comprehensive. You should be able to screen for depression or the mental health issues when somebody comes in with a substance use disorder. We should be able to use medications. There are FDA-approved medication for addiction. And we should use what I call, what not me, I didn't coin the term, of course, chronic disease management. We should follow people over time. It's a chronic disease, just like hypertension, diabetes, or depression. You're not going to make it go away with 30 days of anything. This is going to be a condition with the person's life for a long time. And so being able to have a good enough dose and duration of care, keep people involved with a professional over time, monitor them using lab tests. One of the new things from the American Society of Addiction Medicine is a big monograph on urine drug testing and how that can really help the clinical situation, not just using it in employment situations to find people and weed them out. That's not what drug testing should be used for. It should be used to help monitor people's state of abstinence when they're in treatment. So counseling, medication, long-term engagement, respect and compassion, integration with general medical care, integration with mental health care. That's what addiction care is in 2017, if you have access to it with insurance.
Dr. Mike Miller is with us, medical director of the Harrington Recovery Center at Rogers Memorial Hospital in Oconomowoc. We are talking about addiction treatment and the Senate health care bill. He and others are worried about how that legislation could affect addiction treatment in Wisconsin and beyond. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, maybe your experiences. Do you or someone you know struggle with opioid addiction? What do you think of the GOP healthcare bill's plan to deal with that crisis? Share what addiction recovery resources have been useful to you, and let us know if you rely on Medicaid. Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Dr. Mike Miller is with us, addiction psychiatrist at Rogers Memorial Hospital in Oconomowoc, a past president of the American Society of Addiction Medicine, talking about the GOP health care bill and what it can mean for people seeking treatment for opioid addiction and other addictions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this an issue that is important to you that affects maybe you or someone in your family? What are your thoughts on this bill? Have you gotten addiction treatment? Has someone close to you? Should it be covered by insurance, by Medicaid? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Before we go to our callers, Dr. Miller, you're tracking this issue closely. Can you give us some numbers that put this this story in perspective?
I'd be happy to, Rob. Before the ACA was adopted in the Essential Benefits Package, 30% of health plans sold in the individual and small group market did not have addiction benefits at all. There's been a treatment gap that's been followed my entire career. The data goes back way into the 60s on the percentage of people with addiction and those who need treatment and those who actually get it. There have been times where the gap was 95%. Only 5% of people who needed treatment got it. And the ACA and the parity bill before it have been so important. There was a 20% reduction in the treatment gap just because of this legislation that would all get repealed if the sponsors in the Senate get their way. 50% of the Medicaid spending on treatment for addiction has come from Medicaid expansion. Getting rid of that would devastate those people. 2.8 million Americans with addiction gained coverage for the first time through Medicaid expansion alone, not just what happened in the private market with the Essential Benefits Package. These are real lives. And, you know, the House bill that was so pilloried had $2 billion for opioids. And they're trying to sweeten the deal to get more people to vote for it on the Senate side. Now they just raised it to 45. Oh, my God, what a huge number. But, again, Medicaid is still a big part of the coverage for folks that have this disease. We can't forget what's happening on the private side. And on balance, this bill is supported by, I'm not quite sure who, but we know who opposes it. And the statistics are 80 to 88% of the public, but the American Medical Association, American Psychiatric Association, American Academy of Pediatrics, American Society of Addiction Medicine, American College of Emergency Physicians. I mean, the doctors know what coverage means to people. And adopting this proposal for repeal and replace the way it's structured now would be devastating to people's lives. People would die.
Let's bring on our callers now. Dale joins us in Chippewa Falls. Dale, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. First of all, I agree with your guest that this $45 billion is just a bribe, absolutely. And I don't agree with that. But here's my question. I've been paying my own health insurance for years. And so now I'm on an individual plan. My wife and I are on an individual plan. And we are forced to pay this, you know, super high premium. In fact, by the way, our insurance company, we are in Chippewa County, Health Traditions, I'm going to say it, just dropped out of the individual market. They didn't say why. We just got a letter. So we got through the end of the year to find another, and we really only have one or two options left. But my question is, I would prefer, if I can reduce my premiums, I don't want to buy opioid or addiction. You know what I mean? I don't need mental health. I'm 60 years old. You know what? I would be willing to take the risk to say, if my premium's $300 less, $500 less, whatever it is a month, because it's ridiculous right now.
Dale, thanks for the call. I want to bring Dr. Miller on. This is not an uncommon argument. People say, why should I pay for whatever coverage that I know I'm not going to need, in this case, addiction or mental health treatment, he says.
Well, of course, you know, big argument also, why should I pay for maternity coverage if I'm out of childbearing age? These arguments are made. And again, the ACA looked at the broad picture, and it has to do with risk sharing. When you don't cover certain things, then the people that have it sort of make the risk pool sicker and make the premiums for them even higher. I just read an email today about the situation in Chippewa County with that particular carrier dropping an individual market. Another carrier is moving in, and it's going to cover the same people with Mayo as the preferred provider in that network. So it would be a different carrier. But Dale's raising an important point. The problem nationwide is individual market has suffered because the insurance companies can't predict the future because all this repeal is hanging over their heads. And so to project into the future, their actuaries are setting up worst-case scenarios. These premiums don't have to be this high if they have a predictable marketplace in which to operate. And what's happened is, without tweaking, repairing, making better the ACA, if your only option is repeal, then it's the current situation is tough, and it is rising premiums for the individual marketplace. But we could fix that, and that's what I think members of Congress want to do if given the chance, is to stabilize individual markets so these premiums won't go up like this.
Dale, thanks for that call. Good luck as you change coverage. Talking to Dr. Mike Miller about addiction treatment and the Senate health care plan. We go next to Kenna in Racine. Kenna, hi.
Hi, Dr. Miller. I really appreciate this conversation because even though the opioid epidemic is finally being made aware of in the public area, my daughter actually died from an accidental overdose of heroin. And the reason I'm so upset about the possibility of Medicaid being cut is because she was in recovery when she had relapsed, and that's when she died. But she would not have been in recovery for about 3 years if it hadn't been for Medicaid coverage. People have to go in treatment sometimes 2 and 3 times before they get it. Addiction is so powerful. And she did, and she stuck with it, and she had wonderful Medicaid providers, and they helped me get my daughter back for the 3 years prior to losing her. And I also am concerned when the state turns down the extra federal funds that's being offered for Medicaid, because we need more funding, we need more treatment facilities, and we also need facilities that are parent-friendly.
Kenna, thank you so much. I'm very sorry for your loss. Glad at least you had that extra 2-3 years with your daughter, Dr. Miller.
Well, this is a tale told so often. The problem with opioids is that heroin is deadly, but it's all the adulterants in the heroin. And so it's the synthetics, the fentanyls and the sufentanyls and the carfentanyls, and the people that relapse, they're just sitting ducks. They don't know what's in the product they just bought. It's so sad. But there was a quality of life. There was an enjoyment of relationship for 3 years during that good quality recovery. I've done this my whole professional career, and everybody beats up addiction treatment. Why do you have to go back? Well, how many times do people go back for asthma? How many times do people get hospitalized with ketoacidosis for diabetes? And does the patient get blamed when that happens? How many times do people end up with asthma attacks in the emergency room? Do people say, will you please get out of my emergency room? We've already treated you for asthma 3 times in the last 2 years. Get out of here. But if it's addiction, it's like, what are you doing here? You don't deserve this. This is a relapsing illness. Chronic diseases do that. They wax and wane. And the job is to improve quality of life and extend life as much as you can. And professional help can help. And again, both medication and counseling. It's always sad to hear stories like this. But thanks for the call.
Dr. Miller, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Dr. Mike Miller. He's an addiction psychiatrist and medical director of the Harrington Recovery Center at Rogers Memorial Hospital in Oconomowoc. He joined us to talk about how the Republican Senate health care bill could affect the fight against opioid addiction and other addiction treatment issues.